Tonight, emotional defense. White House Chief of Staff John Kelly holding back tears, speaking about the death of his son and pushing back on criticism of President Trump's condolence call to the widow of a fallen U.S. soldier. Plus, inside the ambush, new details about what happened when U.S. forces came under attack in Niger. Bush's warning, a stunning rebuke of the current president from the last Republican president, without mentioning his name. Campus state of emergency, protests, and a massive brigade in the streets as police try to prevent another Charlottesville. Inside nuclear-armed North Korea, our team is there with rare access amid threats of war. Teaming up, big brands joining forces looking to lure you in for the holidays. And the story behind these powerful images of the postman who went above and beyond to deliver. Also tonight, we've got the surprising new forecast for winter.
This is NBC Nightly News with Lester Holt.
Good evening to our viewers in the West. Thank you for being here. We begin with the extraordinary moment in the White House briefing room late today when Chief of Staff General John Kelly, a Gold Star father, broke his public silence over the deaths of four American soldiers in Niger and, in deeply personal terms, came to the defense of President Trump and his outreach efforts to the families of those fallen heroes.
In the four cases we're talking about, Niger, my son's case in Afghanistan, when he died, he was surrounded by the best men on this earth, his friends. That's what the president tried to say to four families the other day.
Kelly also had strong words for the congresswoman who listened in and reported on the president's phone call to a Gold Star widow while not disputing her account. Let's begin tonight with our national correspondent, Peter Alexander.
President Trump's top White House general tonight providing political cover. John Kelly in deeply personal terms defending the president's call this week to Sergeant LaDavid Johnson's widow.
If you elect to call a family like this, it is about the most difficult thing you could imagine. There's no perfect way to make that phone call.
Kelly, whose son Robert was killed in Afghanistan in 2010, saying he'd advise the president against making condolence calls.
It's not the phone call that parents, family members are looking forward to.
While fiercely denouncing criticism by Democratic Congresswoman Frederica Wilson, who accused President Trump of disrespecting Johnson.
I was stunned when I came to work yesterday morning and brokenhearted. It stuns me that a member of Congress would have listened in on that conversation. Absolutely stuns me.
Kelly so distraught Wednesday, he says he left the White House for Arlington National Cemetery.
The only thing I could do to collect my thoughts was to go and walk among the finest men and women on this earth. Went over there for an hour and a half, walked among the stones, some of whom I put there, because they were doing what I told them to do when they were killed.
The retired four-star Marine general opening his remarks with a stirring account of the process that occurs when a service member dies.
Their buddies wrap them up in whatever passes as a shroud, puts them on a helicopter as a routine, and sends them home.
It's a controversy President Trump started Monday.
If you look at President Obama and other presidents, most of them didn't make calls.
Kelly tonight saying his family did not receive a call from President Obama.
That was not a criticism. That was just to simply say, I don't believe President Obama called.
Who reached out to Kelly? His best friend, Joint Chiefs Chairman Joseph Dunford.
He said, Kel, he was doing exactly what he wanted to do when he was killed. He knew what he was getting into by joining that 1%. He knew what the possibilities were because we're at war.
Those words echoed by Mr. Trump this week to Johnson's widow.
He said, well, I guess you knew something to the fact that he knew what he was getting into when he signed up.
Words the president had said were fabricated. Kelly punctuating his remarks with a poignant appeal.
Let's not let this maybe last thing that's held sacred in our society, a young man, young woman going out and giving his or her life for our country. Let's try to somehow keep that sacred.
It was a rare and emotional moment in the briefing room here today. John Kelly, who's typically very private, now for the second time in 2 weeks, speaking publicly on behalf of his boss, after a controversial debate sparked by the president's own words. Lester?
All right, Peter Alexander with an emotional scene inside the White House briefing room today. Peter, thank you. Now, about that deadly mission that claimed those four Americans, still lots of questions. The Pentagon says It has launched a formal investigation into how a routine patrol turned into an ambush and what occurred afterward. Our Pentagon correspondent Hans Nichols is learning new details about what happened.
This is how Pentagon officials say it happened. Fewer than 10 special forces were at the village just miles from the Mali border, meeting with tribal elders. A smaller group stayed behind, guarding their vehicles. It was near dusk when an enemy force of roughly 50, concealed in brush, attacked the U.S. Green Berets, firing machine guns and rocket-propelled grenades. It took 30 minutes for French air support to arrive on scene. French helicopters evacuated the U.S. casualties, and a U.S. contractor recovered the American dead. But Sergeant LeDavid Johnson was separated from the group during the attack. Aircraft flying overhead picked up a signal from a cell phone or his emergency beacon, but it grew faint as they were searching. More than 100 special forces from across the globe descended to join the search. Roughly 48 hours later, Johnson's body was recovered by Nigerian forces. The Pentagon challenging any suggestion that Sergeant Johnson was left behind.
Nothing could be further from the truth, and that's an important myth that needs to be corrected now, I think.
Did I hear you correctly that American troops stayed on the battlefield the entire time until Sergeant Johnson's body was recovered?
Within the battle space, either American or Nigerian or French, and in some cases all three at the same time, were engaged in active searches.
The details are still unclear, and the investigation could take months. Congress wants answers sooner.
We are co-equal branches of government. We should be informed at all times.
From the Secretary of Defense, blunt talk about the risks American forces are forced to confront in places like Niger.
There's a reason we have U.S. Army soldiers there and not the Peace Corps, because we carry guns.
Lester, tonight there's a memorial service for 39-year-old Jeremiah Johnson, one of the four soldiers who died in Niger. And here at the Pentagon, officials are insistent that they will fully cooperate with Congress. Lester?
All right. Hans Nichols with the reporting from the Pentagon tonight. Thank you. As President Trump deals with that fallout, two of his predecessors were back in the spotlight today. Barack Obama back on the campaign trail for the first time since leaving office. And George W. Bush, who has largely stayed on the sidelines in a rare appearance, delivering a powerful message. NBC News White House correspondent Kristen Welker has that story.
Thank you.
Tonight, a pair of past presidents raising concerns about the direction of the country they once led.
Are you fired up?
Former President Obama campaigning for New Jersey's Democratic candidate for governor.
We are rejecting a politics of fear. That we are embracing a politics that says everybody counts.
But the former Republican president spoke with a sharper edge today.
This is a unique moment.
Delivering a clear condemnation of the current president without mentioning him by name.
We've seen nationalism distorted into nativism. We've forgotten the dynamism that immigration has always brought to America.
And he warned.
Bigotry seems emboldened. Our politics seems more vulnerable to conspiracy theories.
In 2000, Bush won the White House on a promise of compassionate conservatism. Today, taking a not-so-subtle swipe at the current climate.
We've seen our discourse degraded by casual cruelty.
In a bruising primary, President Trump defeated Bush's brother, former Florida Governor Jeb Bush.
The World Trade Center came down during your brother's reign. Remember that.
Today, Mr. Bush calling for an end to angry words.
Bullying and prejudice in our public life sets a national tone, provides permission for cruelty and bigotry.
Two former leaders making their voices heard once again. Kristen Welker, NBC News, The White House.
A state of emergency and a heavy police presence today at the University of Florida as white nationalist Richard Spencer made a speaking appearance on campus. Authorities taking no chances, hoping to prevent a repeat of the violent clashes in Charlottesville, Virginia, back in August that left a woman dead. In the end, protesters greatly outnumbered supporters of Spencer and drowned him out with chants during his remarks. Overseas now to North Korea, leveling a new threat of war. The regime warning it will unleash a, quote, unimaginable nuclear strike on the U.S. after American military forces, including an aircraft carrier, conducted joint drills with South Korea. Now NBC's Keir Simmons has just made it inside North Korea and has rare access to an isolated country on the edge.
Tonight, inside North Korea's capital, patriotic posters and images of war. Our journey begins in Beijing, we met American aid workers making the same trip, a group granted one of the few exceptions to the U.S. travel ban.
Do you feel safe traveling to North Korea?
This is like my 50-something trip, we all have families at home. We all want to get back to our families, so yes.
Flying here is not without risk right now. Furious over U.S. military exercises this week, North Korea today threatened an unimaginable strike. Inside North Korea, we drive to the front line with the South, the DMZ.
In this nuclear nation, there appeared to be more bikes on the road than cars.
Perhaps one reason so much of this country's money is spent on the military. That is the border between North and South. This side, socialism. There is where the capitalist world begins. And we're not allowed to stay here for very long. A border guard gives us a tour. We ask about President Trump, who will visit the South next month.
What do you think of President Trump?
He is mentally ill, the lieutenant colonel claims. And if there's a war, he says, we will win. We stop to talk to commuters about the growing tensions. Everywhere, we are escorted by government minders.
If U.S. Army force embark on the war, we can fight against the U.S. Army.
You're ready to fight if you need to.
Yeah.
Tonight, officials here not backing down from international condemnation of their nuclear program. North Korea's vice foreign minister told us negotiation is only possible if U.S. nuclear weapons are also on the table. A non-starter in Washington. Lester?
All right, Keir Simmons inside North Korea tonight. Now to a reality check on the situation on the ground in Puerto Rico. President Trump today in the Oval Office with Puerto Rico's governor was asked how he would grade the White House's response so far.
I give ourselves a 10. We have provided so much, so fast. We were actually there before the storm hit.
The president grading the response a 10, but tonight on the eve of 1 month since the hurricane hit, NBC's Gabe Gutierrez, who remains on the island, shows us the daily struggle the majority of the island still faces.
In Old San Juan, Eddie Ramirez runs a bed and breakfast, but after Hurricane Maria, he's become his neighborhood's power source.
And you feel helpless, even though we're actually trying to do as much as we can.
When he installed these solar panels years ago, he never dreamed they'd become his lifeline. Now he's running extension cords to surrounding homes, storing insulin, milk, and ice for his neighbors.
We're trying to be positive, but it's so hard to be that.
Almost 80% of Puerto Rico is still in the dark, but Governor Ricardo Rosselló claims that number will drop to 5% in less than 2 months.
Is it realistic to expect that the power grid will be back up and running in most of Puerto Rico by mid-December?
Yes, that's why I proposed it.
At this aging power plant, they've rented two massive turbines from a Florida company that officials say will light up the capital city within 2 weeks.
Well, how do you fix this? It's certainly a great challenge.
Rebuilding the grid from scratch largely falls on Ricardo Ramos, the recently appointed CEO of the Power Authority, which went bankrupt after allegations of corruption and a long history of maintenance problems.
This is extremely old technology, you know, a steam power plant with boilers, you are burning a bunker fuel. That is, you know, unheard of.
For Eddie Ramirez, skepticism is measured in mangled power poles.
It's a ghost town. It's dying little by little.
The government hasn't lit up his neighborhood, so tonight, it's up to him. Gabe Gutierrez, NBC News, San Juan, Puerto Rico.
The suspected gunman in a deadly two-state shooting rampage is in police custody this evening, but investigators are unsure what may have motivated him to kill three co-workers and wound two others in Maryland before driving to Delaware, where he allegedly shot and injured another victim there. Federal agents captured the suspect last night following a day-long manhunt. The forecast is in for winter, and the folks at NOAA say for much of the country, get ready for a warm one. Not hot, of course. It is still winter. But they say it should be a mild season. Not quite as warm as the last two winters, however. They say La Nina is to blame for the warmer temps to come from California to Maine. But it will be a colder than normal winter in the Pacific Northwest. Still ahead tonight, Walmart's new weapon in the shopping wars, how the retail giant plans to redefine the American mall as we know it, what it means for rival Amazon, and more importantly, your wallet. Also, the shocking moment a food truck explodes, flames quickly spreading to other cars. What caused it? We're back now, and with orders already rolling in for the holiday season, retailers are joining forces in unexpected ways to try and capture your dollar. So what happens when low-priced giant Walmart teams up with a high-end department store? The idea? A new kind of shopping mall experience. NBC News business correspondent Jolene Kent explains.
America's biggest retailer on the cusp of making a deal with America's oldest, all in an effort to bring in new customers. Walmart is in talks with Lord & Taylor to sell the 190-year-old retailer's products online, according to the Wall Street Journal. Walmart's goal? Start an online mall, bringing in established brands to attract new shoppers to compete with Amazon.
Are we entering a situation where the consumer is going to be better off or worse off?
I think the consumer ultimately benefits here. More choices, more options, more pricing transparency.
Shoppers are divided.
I've actually been shopping online more than I used to.
I want to be able to see it for myself. I want to know exactly what it is.
Walmart has been on a tear acquiring new brands from Jet.com to Bonobos to ModCloth, with more aggressive plans on the horizon. Amazon is beefing up, too, now accepting returns at Kohl's stores while it sells Kenmore appliances from Sears and Nike products directly on their site. This comes as 25% of traditional malls are expected to close by 2022. This year, more than 5,000 stores have already shut their doors. This is a fight for survival.
Right now, retailers need to evolve. Consumers' behaviors, their attitudes towards shopping, and the technology they bring into the store fundamentally has changed how their expectation is of the retail experience.
In the retail Hunger Games, brands uniting to bag your business. Jolene Kent, NBC News, New York.
We'll take a short break. When we come back, something you hardly ever see happen, why this day is going to go down in sports history. Take a look at the fireball caught on camera in Portland, Oregon.
Oh, my gosh, it's just...
Authorities say a pair of food trucks exploded while workers were filling up a generator. The fire spread to nearly a dozen cars in the lot. Thankfully, no one was seriously injured. Important news for parents about our kids and mobile devices. The amount of time American children ages 8 and younger are spending in front of mobile screens has more than tripled in 4 years, according to a new study, from 15 minutes a day in 2013 to 48 minutes a day now. Experts say the increase isn't all that surprising, but it does make it harder to monitor exactly what your child is looking at. Sports fans, you've got a busy night ahead of you. Get the nachos cooking. There are games in the NFL, Major League Baseball, the NBA, and the NHL, all four of them at once. It's the kind of thing you only see in the fall when the seasons overlap. It's only happened 17 other times in history, and there's a term coined for it. They call it the sports equinox. When we come back, the incredible story of American strength behind a striking image from Fire Ravage, California. Finally tonight, something caught our attention recently in our coverage of the devastating fires in California. You might recall it as well. I'm talking about that striking image of a lone mail truck still making its rounds through a once vibrant neighborhood turned to rubble and ashes. We asked our Gotti Schwartz to track down the story behind that image, and what he found was a postman on an emotional mission.
In devastation so vast, the smallest things stand out. A toy car, a purple bandana, a mailbox still standing while everything else has burned. This desolate road of destruction is postman Trevor Smith's daily route. For 8 years, he's picked up mail from a senior community called The Orchard. Today, he picks up their melted mailboxes.
It's scorched. It's first class. We will forward it on.
His white mail carrier out of place among the ruins. Until you see some homes still standing and people like 97-year-old Nora Hennings waiting for him by their doors.
Did you evacuate or did you stay in your house?
No, I stayed.
Nora tells him she was by herself when the fire swept through. And as he continues, the thought of her alone haunts him.
She was left there when the fire was burning and people had evacuated. That's frightening. She couldn't escape.
In this community, the mail is precious cargo.
How's it going?
Inside, Social Security checks, prescriptions, medications, and messages from a generation that still handwrites notes.
I took a letter from a woman, and then she's like, wait, can I have that back? I need to write a letter. I need to write more.
She wrote that she was okay, but their house was gone.
I don't know what to do with that information. That's sad, but communication is important, whether it's something you want to have to tell somebody or not.
And when the loss is overwhelming, his purpose is simple. Deliver the mail.
Thank you.
Finish the route. Gotti Schwartz, NBC News, Santa Rosa, California.
Heroes wear all kinds of uniforms. We appreciate you spending part of your evening with us. That is Nightly News for this Thursday night. I'm Lester Holt. For all of us at NBC News, thank you for watching and good night.